Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Pete Musto, Alice Bryant, and Brian Lynn. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Pete Musto.
Researchers say the world has lost more than one-fourth of its land-based insects over the past 30 years. The finding comes from a major study of insect populations worldwide. The researchers noted the loss of such bugs suggests a more complex problem than earlier research has shown. Ants, bees, butterflies, and other land-based bugs have been suffering population drops of about 9% every 10 years or so. But freshwater insects, such as dragonflies and mosquitoes, have been growing in number over the years. The researchers found that different areas have experienced different rates of insect decline. They reported their findings in Science magazine. For the study, researchers examined 166 sets of records from a total of 1,676 sites in 41 countries. Some of the information dated as far back as 1925. Overall, bugs are disappearing at a rate of just under 1% a year, with the strongest declines reported in the United States and Germany. That is a much smaller population decline than noted in some smaller localized studies, but it adds up to something awfully alarming, said Roel van Klink. He is with the German Center for Integrative Biology and was the lead author of the report. The decline across insect orders on land is jaw-dropping, said Nick Haddad, an expert on butterflies at Michigan State University. He was not involved in the study. Ongoing decline on land at this rate will be extremely damaging for ecological systems and for humans, Haddad told the Associated Press. He noted that insects are pollinators. They move pollen from part of the flower of a plant to another part. This causes the plant to produce fruit or seeds. Insects also help to break down dead plants and animals. Van Klink added that insects also serve as food to many animals, making them very important to all of Earth's ecosystems. But at the same time, insects transmit terrible diseases like malaria, Zika, and West Nile virus. They eat our crops and damage tree plantations, he told the Reuters news agency. The researchers also studied insects that spend at least part of their lives in fresh water. These bugs were found to have experienced a population increase of about 11% every 10 years. Fresh water covers only about 2.5% of the Earth's surface, so the majority of insects live on land. The number of insects, on average, has declined in the air, in the grass, and soil, but not in trees or underground, the researchers found. Some estimates show that land-based insects would face a population drop of 24% over the next 30 years. Freshwater bugs would experience a 38% increase over the same period. Insect declines are worst in North America and in parts of Europe. But the decline appears to be leveling off in the United States. The U.S. Midwest lost 4% of its bugs a year. Van Klink noted that the big international losses seem to be around cities and surrounding areas, as well as cropland, where bugs are losing their food and habitat. I'm Pete Musto.
The United States is to hold a presidential election in November of 2020. The coronavirus crisis, however, has caused concern among some Americans about the safety of public voting stations. As a result, the interest in voting by mail has increased around the nation. The process would permit citizens to send their ballot through the U.S. Postal Service to election officials in their states. President Donald Trump is opposed to the process, and Republican Party officials in some states are supporting his objection. A new survey finds that 47% of Democratic Party members and 27% of Republicans support voting by mail. The Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs Research did the survey. It found that 39% of Americans overall support voting by mail in November. In 2018, under 20% supported the process. The survey found that 40% of Americans are against voting by mail. However, 48% of those questioned also said they would support the process if the coronavirus were spreading come November. The survey also found a divide on support for no-excuse absentee voting. This system permits registered voters to vote by mail without providing a reason for doing so. The no-excuse absentee system is already in place in most states. All states do elections differently. Only 5 states automatically mail ballots to every voter. But in answer to the coronavirus, some states have changed the political party presidential nominating elections to the mail-only process. The Republican National Committee has been fighting some of those moves. A New Mexico court recently decided in favor of Republicans who sought to block the state from holding its June primary by mail only. It forced the state to open some voting stations. The ruling also forces citizens to request permission to vote by mail. But in Texas, the Democratic Party won a court case about voting processes. A judge ruled that the state government must permit voters to vote by mail if they fear getting COVID-19 at voting stations. In Wisconsin, the Republican-controlled legislature defeated a request to hold that state's April 7th primary and state court election by mail. Such battles are expected to continue, especially if the virus is growing in the fall. I'm Alice Bryant.
The coronavirus crisis has resulted in major drops in pollution across the world. Environmental groups welcome this change. But some experts warn that pollution is likely to return to levels before the crisis once life returns to normal. Skies have been clearer in cities from New York to Paris to Beijing as governments closed businesses and schools and issued stay-at-home orders. Satellite data shows nitrogen dioxide has dropped about 30% in parts of the Northeast United States compared to the previous 5 years. Nitrogen dioxide is a major form of air pollution. Michelle Mannion is an economist with the U.S.-based World Resources Institute. On a recent day in Boston, Massachusetts, she noted that the air was so clear that she could read the letters on top of the Prudential Building, a well-known city structure. "I've never been able to do that," Mannion told VOA. "It's really amazing." Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker began ordering schools and businesses to close on March 24th. Since then, traffic on area roads has been cut by about two-thirds. "People are not commuting," Mannion said. "It's a huge difference." Large drops in road traffic and air travel have greatly reduced oil demand worldwide. The United States uses more oil than any other country. But U.S. demand fell 31% below average for January to mid-March, the U.S. Energy Information Administration reported. Drops in production for fossil fuels such as coal, oil, and natural gas may lower pollution emissions by 5.5% this year, the British climate research website Carbon Brief predicts. That would be the largest reduction ever by far, more than four times the decrease during the 2008-2009 Great Recession. But some experts say such reductions are not likely to last. The general expectation is that most of this will pick up once the crisis is over, Michael Gerard told VOA. He is director of the Saban Center for Climate Change Law at New York's Columbia University. Satellite images have shown recent rises in air pollution in China, which reopened some industries after reporting the spread of the new coronavirus had slowed. The coronavirus crisis has also affected renewable energy companies. Bloomberg NEF, an energy research organization, recently lowered its 2020 estimate for new wind power construction worldwide by 12%. The organization's estimate for solar power was cut by 8%. In addition, investment in renewable energy is low, and electric vehicle sales are down 40% compared to last year. But Gerard says those drops are likely temporary. The cost of building solar and wind has plummeted so much in recent years that it's highly competitive. It's really often outbidding fossil fuels, Gerard said. That hasn't changed. We've seen a slowdown in the construction, but I think that should pick up once people are fully back to work. However, Bloomberg NEF's estimates for renewable energy expansion show the world falling short of climate change targets set by the 2015 United Nations Paris Agreement. A main goal of that agreement is to keep Earth from warming more than 2 degrees Celsius. Logan Goldie Scott is BNEF's head of clean energy. He told VOA that the deeper the economic damage is from the coronavirus, the more difficult it will be for the world to reach the UN target. I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember.
A stunning and cowardly strike on the United States. The president vows the killers will pay for this attack on America.
The United States changed as a result of the September 11th terrorist attacks. CBS newsman Dan Rather expressed what many Americans were feeling.
You will remember this day as long as you live.
On the morning of that sunny September day that came to be known as 9/11, the nation came under attack from Al-Qaeda, an extremist group led by Osama bin Laden. Its targets were world-famous buildings representing America's economic and military power. Al-Qaeda operatives hijacked 4 American passenger airplanes. The hijackers were from Middle Eastern countries. Each group included a pilot trained to fly 2 kinds of Boeing airliners, the 757 and the 767. At 8:46 on that morning, one group of hijackers flew a Boeing 767 into the North Tower of the World Trade Center in New York City. 17 minutes later, another group flew a second 767 into the Trade Center's South Tower. The planes exploded in fireballs that sent clouds of smoke into the air. The intense heat of the burning jet fuel from the planes caused structural failures that brought down both buildings. About an hour after the first plane hit the World Trade Center, another group of Al-Qaeda operatives flew a 757 airliner into the Pentagon, the headquarters of the Defense Department in Arlington, Virginia. The plane exploded against a wall of the huge building where more than 20,000 people worked. A fourth group had taken control of another 757, but some of the passengers on that flight, United 93, had heard about the terrorist attacks through phone calls to their families. Several passengers and crew members attempted to retake control of the plane. It crashed near the town of Shanksville, Pennsylvania. Investigators later said the hijackers probably planned to attack the Capitol, a major government building in Washington, D.C., where Congress meets. There was also concern that the White House could have been a target. The 9/11 attacks saw the worst loss of lives on American soil since Japan attacked Pearl Harbor in 1941. That attack caused the United States to enter World War II.
The pictures of airplanes flying into buildings, fires burning, huge structures collapsing, have filled us with disbelief, terrible sadness, and a quiet, unyielding anger.
As expressed by President George W. Bush on 9/11, the attacks left Americans in a state of shock and disbelief. But that was soon replaced by anger and a resolve that such events would not be allowed to happen again.
These acts of mass murder were intended to frighten our nation into chaos and retreat. But they have failed. Our country is strong. A great people has been moved to defend a great nation. Terrorist attacks can shake the foundations of our biggest buildings, but they cannot touch the foundation of America. These acts shatter steel, but they cannot dent the steel of American resolve.
At Ground Zero, the site of the World Trade Center destruction, rescue efforts continued into the night. New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani was asked if Arab American or Muslim groups in New York might be targeted due to the nature of the attacks.
Just the opposite. They will receive extra protection. The particular individuals responsible and the groups responsible, that's up to law enforcement, and it's up to the United States government to figure out. And citizens of New York should, even if they have anger, which is understandable, it isn't their place to get involved in this. Then they're just participating in the kind of activity we just witnessed. And New Yorkers are not like that.
And Giuliani spoke of the strength of spirit of the people of his city.
People tonight should say a prayer for the people that we've lost and be grateful that we're all here. And tomorrow, New York is going to be here, and we're going to rebuild, and we're going to be stronger than we were before.
On September 20th, President Bush went before a joint session of Congress to declare a war on terror.
Our war on terror begins with Al-Qaeda, but it does not end there. It will not end until every terrorist group of global reach has been found, stopped, and defeated.
President Bush explained that the war on terror would be different from other wars.
Our response involves far more than instant retaliation and isolated strikes. Americans should not expect one battle, but a lengthy campaign, unlike any other we have ever seen. We will starve terrorists of funding, turn them one against another, drive them from place to place until there is no refuge or no rest. And we will pursue nations that provide aid or safe haven to terrorism. Every nation in every region now has a decision to make. Either you are with us or you are with the terrorists. From this day forward, any nation that continues to harbor or support terrorism will be regarded by the United States as a hostile regime.
President Bush demanded that the Taliban rulers of Afghanistan stop sheltering Osama bin Laden and surrender him. The president also called on the Taliban to close terrorist training camps in Afghanistan. The Taliban refused. They demanded evidence that Osama bin Laden had been involved in the attacks of 9/11. They said that if such evidence was provided, he would be tried in an Islamic court. The United States refused to provide evidence. On October 7th, the United States and Britain launched airstrikes against Taliban targets. What became known as the War on Terror had begun. Tribal groups from the opposition Northern Alliance led a ground attack. But suicide bombers had killed their leader, Ahmad Shah Massoud, on September 9th, 2 days before the 9/11 attacks. By November, Taliban control began to collapse in several provinces. Taliban forces fled Kabul, the capital. But the ouster of the Taliban government did not mean the end of the war on terror. Some of President Bush's advisors had long supported an invasion of Iraq. As early as October 2001, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld suggested that military action against Iraq was possible. Government officials accused Iraq of having links to terrorist groups like Al-Qaeda. They noted that Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein had used chemical weapons, and they said he was seeking to develop biological and nuclear weapons as well. In October 2001, Congress passed the USA Patriot Act. This law provided the government with more power to gather information about suspected terrorists in the United States. Critics said the law invaded constitutional rights to privacy. Civil liberties groups said the Patriot Act gave law enforcement and other agencies too much power. In January 2002, President Bush gave his State of the Union report to Congress. He accused some nations of supporting terrorist organizations. He said the United States would not wait to be attacked by such groups. Instead, it would strike first at the countries that sheltered them. The president identified three nations, North Korea, Iran, and Iraq, as supporters of terror.
States like these and their terrorist allies constitute an axis of evil, arming to threaten the peace of the world by seeking weapons of mass destruction. These regimes pose a grave and growing danger. They could provide these arms to terrorists, giving them the means to match their hatred.
In 2002, the United States opened a detention center at its naval base at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. Some of the fighters arrested in Afghanistan were sent there. They were not considered prisoners of war. Instead, the detainees were treated as unlawful enemy combatants. As such, the Bush administration said they did not have the same rights as war prisoners under international treaties. In the United States, the government also detained some foreign citizens, mostly for violating immigration laws. No terrorism charges were brought against these detainees. Human rights activists and some legal experts protested the detentions. After 9/11, government agencies were criticized for failing to prevent the terrorist attacks. Critics said the agencies should have been working together to gather intelligence. Government officials said part of the issue involved legal restrictions on the gathering and sharing of intelligence. In January 2003, the Department of Homeland Security opened for business.
Maybe you see something suspicious, but you don't want to get involved. It's nothing, you think. Can you be sure?
There was a lot to do.
If you see something, say something. Report suspicious activity to local authorities.
Transportation security, immigration, law enforcement, border protection. It represented the biggest government reorganization in more than half a century. All or part of 22 federal agencies and departments were combined into the new agency. Its job, to keep America safe in a world that had changed in a single day. The War on Terror, which began after the 9/11 terrorist attacks on the United States, escalated in March 2003, when a coalition of American-led forces invaded Iraq. The mission, as stated by President Bush and British Prime Minister Tony Blair, was to disarm Iraq of weapons of mass destruction, to end Saddam Hussein's support for terrorism, and to free the Iraqi people.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.